Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
I thought that's who you were.
No, punk ass bitches from the right call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I'm an anchor on CNN.
Oh, you're much.
Fredo was from The Godfather. He was that weak brother.
Isn't that your?
And
brother,
they use it as an Italian aspersion. Any of you Italian? It's a fucking insult to your people. It's an insult to your fucking people. It's like the N-word for us. Is that a cool fucking thing?
You're a much more reasonable guy in person.
Fredo's the N-word for Fredo Italian Baggins. People? I don't know that Fredo is the N-word for Italians.
As a non-Italian?
Yes.
I'm not going to weigh in on it.
As an Irishman, I'm not going to weigh in either. But I don't think it's Fredo.
That was some beautiful music in the background.
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
I think that was the Godfather soundtrack.
I need to do the intro.
Oh, let's do it. All right.
Yeah, I heard you do it last week, so it was fantastic.
I messed it up. Give it to me again so I can be refreshed.
Sure. Hello, and welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema, Suns. I'm your host, Jason Colleen. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and the proprietor of Sun Cinema, Ryan Hunter Mitchell.
Hello, Jason. It's good to have you back.
Ryan, good to be back.
Let's go over what we just listened to. Since we have to. That was the Godfather soundtrack. Beautiful soundtrack.
One of the greats, yeah.
And a couple months old video of Chris Cuomo.
Is that local. That recent?
I don't know how long. It was in the last 6 months, right?
Okay.
I don't know.
Sure. I mean, this is...
Chris Cuomo got called Fredo by some kid with a cell phone at a restaurant and flipped out about it. And I'm a little offended for the Fredo character, who, for all his flaws, is...
Sean Cazalea was a genius.
Great
he was
actor.
Amazing.
But this
every film he was in was nominated for Best Picture.
Truly?
Yeah, I think so. I can double check that.
Take that, but, Cuomo. Getting all pissed off about this. Fredo is a good thing.
It's like 5 movies. Don't get too excited. But it's still.
5 Best Picture nominees.
Yeah.
What have you got, Cuomo? CBS or NBC, whatever one you're on.
We'll come back to that.
We'll come back to it. What that's foreboding is we are going to talk about the question that's been on everyone's mind lately in cinema news, who would win in a fight, the mobsters or the superheroes? And we're going to talk Scorsese and Coppola's feud with, we're guessing, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, it's kind of open-ended on that side. It's not really pointed at, like, Ryan Coogler or, you know, or anybody in particular. It's just, like, the Marvel movies as one. And I think that's kind of their point. You walk me down this path, and I'll tell you where I differ and where I align with some of the things that are being said on both sides.
Yeah, we'll get into that deep. But first, how was the weekend?
The weekend was good. I had planned to go see Robert Eggers' The Lighthouse, which I believe you saw.
I did,
and I did not. So let me hear about that first. Just what was your hot take on?
Since it's Monday, it just came out a couple days ago. I'm going to not give spoilers. But
yeah, don't
honestly,
spoil.
Honestly, it'd be hard to spoil. It is. I'll say this. I watched one trailer, and I just remember William Dafoe saying, "Why did you spill your beans?" to Robert Pattinson.
Right.
And it was black and white, and it was kind of creepy. And I was like, this is from Eggers, who did The Witch.
Yeah. So if you guys haven't seen The Witch, like, go see The Witch. It's like a great slow burn, you know, period piece, creepy as all day.
It is, and it's great right now. Watch it. It's October.
Yeah, it's a perfect time to watch it.
Yeah, good time. Good film to get you into.
That was the first film we went to when we started our horror movie club a couple years ago.
Yeah?
That was it. Yeah.
That's a good
start. We
went
and saw The Witch. Yeah, it was a great start.
So if you liked The Witch and you're excited to see what else is going to come from Robert Eggers, I was excited. I was sold already, so I didn't learn anything more. I don't know if people have watched more trailers. I know it's been getting some hype as it's...
I saw a pretty long trailer for it.
Okay.
But it was a great trailer. It was well cut. Like, I didn't really have an understanding of what's happening. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's two dudes at a lighthouse. There's potentially a mermaid involved here. And, you know, they're kind of going at each other and coexisting as best they can. You know?
Yeah.
Do we have a time? It's like 1890s, right?
Like, yeah, so it does seem end of the 19th century.
Right.
And in a similar way to The Witch, he starts off with the setting. From what I know on both these, he's like, yeah, we I think he writes with his brother.
Establish the setting, yeah. I think so, yeah. Max Eggers, yeah.
So they think of a setting, and they let that really develop everything, which is kind of fun. And in a similar way to The Witch.
In a technique that's not used a ton, you know, to really drive the setting as part and parcel to the story. Wes Anderson comes to mind, but like those truly like a collage effect. Like this is very stark. It's very moody. And to do that well and like draw people in that way is a real interesting way to start a film.
You know, well, you think of like the Coens have this, you know, people have said that they think of a scene. They think of a random occurrence. It could be a scene and then build a story around that somehow.
Yeah, I think a lot of people work that way.
Yeah. And that's something fun. With Eggers, it does seem that he really is all about the setting.
Right.
Because he wants that. In The Witch, that setting, everything about it envelops you. It really does drive the story.
That wood line, man.
Exactly. He's got this creepy wood line. He's got this, what you could think is the hyper-religious pilgrims.
Right.
You know, so he thinks of like something that would be going on in a certain setting, and he just goes from there.
Yeah.
And now that I've seen two of his movies, and I'm an expert on him, it seems that this is what he's going to keep on doing. And it really does work. I mean, the setting is everything on this. It's shot in black and white. It's not widescreen. It's kind of like First Reformed.
Oh, really?
By Schrader, how it was like tight.
Yeah.
And this is really tight.
So you really get the claustrophobic effect.
Super claustrophobic. And whether it's a feat of lighting, of contrast, just visually, this movie, it easily could have been a silent movie.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. And I mentioned that to you when we were prepping for the show. It was just like, I saw this, saw the trailer when I was going to see something, I think The Joker, or Joker.
Please. No definite article.
But anyway, I remember like watching it, and like two-thirds of the way through this trailer, I'm like, it's like a German silent film, but in the most intriguing and best way, you know?
It reminded me of a lot of the Russian or German silent pictures, even like Chaplin type of stuff, how it's like looking at machinery at the time.
Oh, in a certain way.
There's so much about it, just using like blown out contrast, everything about the lighting. They're having so much fun creating texture everywhere, waves, like the contrast of foam on waves. Just everything is super textural. And the two actors knock it out of the park, but it is a movie that's almost it is linear, but you don't know what you're following.
Do you get a sense of how much time is passing? Do they put a clock on it in any way?
Everything is ambiguous on this. So,
all right, I don't want to get away. You know, I'm not giving anything away. I didn't see it. I was supposed to go see it on Sunday. It poured down rain all day, which is actually a great day to go see a movie.
But it was a great day to see that movie.
Yeah, especially, I'm sure. But anyway, we ended up hanging out at the house and watched a couple of weird things, that one of which was... Both were great in their own right, but one was really good, and I would encourage people to see it. I'm happy to talk about that if you...
Which one?
Yeah.
What did you see?
I saw this film. It's called Knife into the Heart, but if you look it up, look up Knife plus Heart. For some reason, the American title isn't Knife into Heart, even though the literal translation from the French is Knife into Heart.
Mm.
So anyway, it's beautiful. I mean, this guy, Jan Gonzalez, made the film Paris, summer, 1979, like very chic, very cool, you know, fashion-wise. The colors are just vibrant, you know, super vibrant. And it's linear, and but it's very French. Like it just injects little things that you're like, oh, that's something that it's going to come up. Something, you know, they're pointing at something for a reason. I don't know at all what this means yet, but it's going to come. And they do deliver on all that. So it's very rewarding that, like, all you're right. rewarded for your, you know, your attention. And it's about a producer of cheap gay porn in 1979 Paris. They don't flinch at any of that, but it's not also like grotesque or, mm-hmm. you know, anything that the community would be up in arms about. It's just like, this is what 1979 Paris gay, you know, porn production was like, you know.
So this is and, like Le Boogie Nights?
I get you. Yeah, we'll cut that out. no. It's a thriller. Like there's a mystery. Somebody's killing these young gentlemen. It's kind of a, you know, don't know what's happening or how this is happening. And then it all starts unfolding. I don't want to give anything away. If I talk about it too much, I'll start like giving tips away. But well worth anybody's time on a, you know, and it's on Canopy. If you guys don't know about Canopy. Six movies a month for free. This is not a plug. They owe us nothing. They don't know who we are. I'm just telling you, if you live in or near a major city that's taking part in this offering that Canopy does, they partnered with all the city libraries. So if you have a library card, you go on Canopy, you download it onto your television or your computer, an app just like anything else, and you get six free movies a month. And it's pretty loaded. Like they somehow still have like a ton of Criterion stuff on there.
They have Ganja and Hess. I just watched the other day.
I just saw like, you know, five Kurosawa movies come across my screen the other day. I was like, well, how are these still on here? Yep. But they're there. And then there's all this fun, crazy, weird, like Italian, you know, late 60s, moddy, you know, super sexy kind of movies. They were just like going for it, you know? All right. And so I watched one called Five Dolls for the August Moon. One of the worst titles I've ever heard. That said, if you're in the right frame of mind, you can totally enjoy this thing. It's campy. It's fun. It's like, you know, a house on an island, kind of a lighthouse situation. Like everybody's held captive and somebody's knocking each other off one by one. It's like an Agatha Christie chamber, murder mystery. Only it's Italian and everybody's sexy.
Perfect.
It's a lot of fun. It completely falls apart, but you can have a great time watching it, truly.
Is the fun you have just on it being kind of ridiculous and visually stimulating?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like the acting's horrible, the dubbing's pretty bad. But, like, everybody, you know, are, like, interesting looking, and there are flashes. It's Mario Bava is the guy that made the film, which kind of a, you know, popular filmmaker in the 60s and 70s in Italy, but like this didn't translate real well. But you can see like flashes of, oh yeah, that's pretty brilliant. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that in a movie before. That's smart. I mean, it's not something I would like put at the top of my list, but if you come across it, if you're on Canopy and you come across it and you're like, give it 15, 20 minutes, see how you feel, you know, either you're going to be into it or you're not. It's no big deal.
Okay, so
what's it called?
Five Dolls of the August Moon. Moon. Yeah. Oh, of the August Moon.
Or four.
Whatever. Four Dolls of the August Moon. However, Dolls of the August Moon. See 15 minutes, see if you want to go on.
Yeah, Five Dolls for the August Moon. And then make an effort to see Knife Plus Heart or Knife into Heart, the French film. It was made in 2018. Stars, what's her name? Johnny Depp's ex-wife, Vanessa Paradis. Who is fantastic in the film. Like, truly, really strong performance. But lots of good performances. That movie, I will tell you, blew me away. I thought it was fantastic.
Great. And same with The Lighthouse. I hesitate to recommend it to everybody. It's not fun. It's great. If you liked The Witch and you're in for like a bit of a mindfuck of a movie, really see it. It's so good.
And probably on the big screen, right? Like the darkness and all that.
I loved it on the big screen. Like
black and white on the big screen.
It might be the best movie I've seen this year. It is so good.
If you've never done this, we talk to a lot of younger people and if you have not seen a true black and white film on a big screen, like do yourself a favor and just see one. You'll get it. You'll be like, oh yeah, this is amazing.
Visually. It really can.
Especially something like this that is done very, very well.
Done extremely well, yeah. Yeah, I think black and white can really capture you. It totally does get lost streaming on a small screen.
Yeah, right.
And I watch everything. I watch everything on my small laptop. I don't care that much. But if you are trying to get like the visual element, and often a filmmaker shooting in black and white, when you hear De Palma or Scorsese or anyone talking about black and white, it's like they're doing it for a reason.
Yeah.
And you're really catching lighting differently. If you can see it on a big screen, then come to Suns and see it on a big screen.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about Suns. On Saturday, we had a great triple feature. We don't usually do triple features. It made for a good night, but we did. So we did Midsommar.
Yep.
Which I still haven't seen. David, watch it.
Oh, you didn't get a chance to.
I'm going to see it this Friday.
Okay.
Showing it again
you're
this
re-showing
Friday.
It. Yeah.
But then we did Wicker Man right after.
Right.
Which those paired together are wonderful. So a lot of people.
Perfect pairing.
We had
That's
people
really good.
Come for all three movies. We had people
like
come
paid and just like
paid.
Stayed
well,
for all
well,
three
people
movies.
People who planned on going
right.
to all three movies.
Boom, boom, boom.
We had some people who came to see the duo of Midsommar and Wicker Man.
And then somebody came for the late show.
And then people came, some people came for Midsommar and the late show of Mandy, Nicolas Cage's Mandy, which I also still haven't seen. I know I'm
that is
a bad person.
Very strong film.
I hear that.
Like it's.
Well, and they've all got.
It can be tough.
I got to hear everyone's opinions like at intermission.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, it's so fun. Yeah, you got wild reactions all over the place for each of those movies. Especially Midsommar, a lot of people were like, laughing in the beginning. And then by intermission, everyone got real like, oh.
I saw it in Georgetown, and it was packed. And the same thing happened. Like, everybody's kind of, it's, you know, nervous laughter, whatever. But they kind of thought it was lighter for a second. And then, a couple things happen early on, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, this is a whole different thing.
Yeah, so it was fun to get the reactions out of that. And each of those movies kind of has a bit of a cult or a...
Oh, yeah.
There's some weird...
There's buzz in the universe for these films, for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, and each in their own movie, kind of, they exist in a kind of weird religious happening.
Right,
you know,
right.
Whether it's Wicker Man, Midsommar, or Mandy, from what I've heard about the
No, for sure, yeah.
So it made for a really fun night
I see what
of
you're
that.
Saying, yes.
And I had a bunch of, on theme, had a bunch of like Jim Jones and David Koresh videos downstairs to get it really creepy.
Yeah, so if you don't know, if you're in D.C. and you haven't been to Suns, I mean, really, shame on you. You're not really taking the
A-O-C,
great things.
A-O-C, we're talking to you.
you're not really taking up all the city has to offer. But if you get a chance and you're coming to D.C., we're talking about it. The movies are upstairs now, have moved upstairs. Seats, 40 or so?
Yeah,
and with a bar and everything upstairs. And then also, but like a full bar with another screen downstairs that Ryan just plays whatever he wants.
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of theme stuff this month.
Right, and you guys do the debates there and things like that.
We do the debates.
Which is a great place to go see a debate. Let's hang out with some cool people.
Oh, yeah,
drink,
those are fun.
You know?
On Thursdays, we've been doing a lot of horror TV. So we showed like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Tales from the Crypt. Next week, we're going to be doing all the Treehouse of Horror episodes.
Oh.
Don't tell Fox or The Simpsons that we're showing them. But
Jesus, like, you're going to do it. That's a marathon. It's like,
yeah, we're just going to show a bunch. Like,
okay.
Like, however many seasons. I guess there's probably like 20-something Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah, that's what
They started the second season when they first did their Halloween
episode.
But we're going to show a lot of them. And we'll probably end up re-showing some of the earlier ones opposed to showing the newer ones.
The mid-90s ones and early 90s ones are like
so much better.
So strong. Yeah,
Shining.
The Shining.
Yeah, so we're going to show a lot of those. And then on Saturdays, we've been showing various compilations of vampires, zombies, cults.
And then the classics on Sundays, right? Double feature classics on Sundays.
So yeah, we've had a bunch of fun showing our horror programming. But now let's get into the battle of the heavyweights.
Yeah. Can I do a sidebar real quick?
Sure.
Here's the list of films John Cazale was in. The Godfather, The Conversation, The Godfather Part 2, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. All five nominated for Best Picture.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great. And he's great in Dog Day.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. We got to go. Pick anywhere you want to go. They'll take us anywhere you want to go. Where do you want to go? Wyoming. Wyoming's not a country.
Okay, so first, let's settle this feud right out the gate.
Right.
I'd choose him over Cuomo any day.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, call
Fredo
me. If I were Cuomo. Italian, I'd say call me Fredo, you know?
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm converted.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Now let's get into some heat. We're a little late on this.
Yeah, well, the buzz started.
But it's built up.
Yeah, no, that was the thing. Like, I saw this first come across maybe October 2nd, October 4th, somewhere. Something popped up, like Martin Scorsese's knocking Marvel. And it wasn't really, like, he wasn't coming on too strong, in my opinion. Like, he said, this kind of theme park idea of, you know, he was really bashing, like, the theaters, right? Like, that was
kind
what he
of,
was going.
Let's see. Let's, okay. let's find it. Let's yeah, get yeah, the yeah. quote. If I even have the quote. I think I do. Okay. So, Scorsese, director of Goodfellas and The Rat and Departed, admitted that he doesn't watch MCU films anymore, explaining, and here's a quote,
all right.
I tried, you know, but that's not cinema. Honestly, the closest I can think of them, as well made as they are, and the actors doing the best they can under the circumstances, is theme parks. It isn't cinema of the human being trying to convey emotional, psychological experience to another human being, Scorsese continued.
Yeah, so it's a little maybe harsher than I thought it was, but like, it didn't seem to faze me much. I was like, well, you know, look, I love Martin Scorsese, fantastic, one of the greatest filmmakers mm-hmm. of all time, all those things. So let's preface all that. But I was also like, he's a 76-year-old guy.
Yeah,
come on. You know, I mean, like, seriously. And, like, he even talked about it at some point here recently. He's like, I'm 76. What do you want?
Yeah,
I'm not going to change.
I don't like theme parks.
Right. Well, I don't like theme parks.
Let's unpack this just a little bit.
Yeah, So it goes from there.
So he's kind of, well, even just, let's just start sure, even just that. With that. Like, he's saying it's not cinema. All right, he's being a gatekeeper.
Right.
For good or bad, that's what he's doing. And then he does say they're well made, said the actors are doing well, but he compares them to theme parks.
Well, and some of those actors he's worked with, so he can't really bash the acting.
Yeah, and know? Well, and I don't even think he, I think he's sincere, no, but no, I'll take
I
it
agree.
For it.
I'll take it at face value, for sure.
But is everyone triggered about it being theme parks? I mean, that's literally, they are literally tied to theme parks. This is Disney's model. Like, sorry, everybody.
Right. You understand, like, the script writers of these films have to check with a laundry list of people on every scene they write to make sure it's not tracking differently than Marvel envisions that character and that character's through line in the comics. And how that's affected, you know, in video games, in like anything you do at this point in Marvel now has a domino effect, so you have to, it has to be like maintained, contained, and what that ends up being is a huge swelled up thing, which is like a theme park,
is literally a theme park, or there is are literally rides for each of these yeah,
exactly.
movies,
right? And I will confess, you know, I've watched, I think the only one I haven't seen is the second Spider-Man, the After Homecoming,
the Euro Trip.
Yeah.
They remade Tom Green's Euro Trip.
Right, with Spider-Man. But I've seen all the others, right? I've seen everything else in this Marvel universe that's come out. I will tell you, I can't tell some of them apart.
Oh, sure.
Like, their stuff, like a scene will flash up from Captain America. I'm like, I have no idea which Captain America this is from.
Uh-huh.
You know? I can't tell if it's, you know, what Age of Ultron or Endgame, you know, could be. I'm not sure. And
loved it,
and had a good time.
Yeah, sure.
You know, didn't bother me at all. But yeah, I mean, to say if your defense is this is unique artistic expression, you know, driven from a director's voice. I mean, like, no, this is not what this is.
Sure,
at all anymore. Than B westerns were in the 1930s and 40s in Hollywood, and I'm not. They're not the same thing, but they're both about as artistically driven by one idea, one man, you know, one auteur. That's not what this is. This is a project.
Yeah,
there are many, many, many people making decisions and have weight in this conversation.
These are written by algorithms.
Favreau is not just calling all the shots, you know.
No way. Even Kevin Feige, who's like running the whole thing,
sure.
and you know, good captain of the MCU.
Right.
I mean, these are toy guys. They're numbers people. Yeah, you've got marvelous set design. I mean, they've picked great yeah. teams to do everything. I mean, I'm sorry that I'm blanking on the woman who did the design for Black Panther.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, incredible set design, incredible themes of sometimes for each movie they'll do interesting ideas, some interesting film work, some interesting lighting, definitely sure in the
and
graphics
good performances.
Departments. Yeah, good yeah. performances.
I mean, you got movie stars, you know, so they're going to be great.
But I do think you're right that clearly that's not what the drive is. These are driven to sell things, yeah. to
sell toys,
sell theme parks, literal theme
to
parks.
To get you to come to the theme parks to do all those things, yep.
And they are very aware of good filmmaking techniques.
They're also very, very aware of their global reach of this. So you get a little bit of homogenization, right? Mm-hmm. Which is on purpose,
yeah.
you know,
some
to not alienate mm-hmm. entire nations of people. Like, they want global mass attraction.
Yeah.
You know?
So I do think whether or not, and I'll weigh in later on what I think is
sure.
good about them, what I think is bad about them, things I think that are wrong. But I do think just saying the theme park analogy, like, yeah, I get that that bites. I bet a lot of people didn't want to hear that. I'm sure,
yeah.
you know, that wasn't easy on some people's ears. But, I mean, that's pretty true. So let's admit that. I think people are kind of upset that that happened. So you got people, everyone kind of had their backlash against
sure.
Scorsese. Twitter mobs of Marvel fans were
right.
getting upset. Some people... right here's something, actually, that I read by... what's his name? Andy something. Well, okay. This is before... we're going to get to Coppola weighing in pretty recently.
Sure.
This is where it gets modern. But before that, right when it happened, one writer... I wish I should have his name. Okay, here we go. Andy Levy, or Levi, wrote an article called The Marvelous Mr. Martin. The legendary director of Goodfellas doesn't think comic book movies are cinema, and people lost their damn minds. The whole article is good. It's worth reading. He takes both sides well, probably better than I'm going to today. But here's his initial response to the direct quote we had from Scorsese saying, they're not cinematic, they don't, you know, they're not psychologically explorative, and they're theme parks. He says, well, he's not right, in quotes, at least not completely. It's weirdly ahistorical for him to say that movies of the Marvel Cinematic Universe aren't cinema, given that most of the history of cinema is comprised of films that are meant to do nothing more than entertain. And it's particularly odd for a film historian of Scorsese's caliber to make a statement like that, considering he's absolutely aware of the long tradition of genre filmmaking, much of which is the very definition of disposable or low art, as some would have it. And I think that's a good take. Like, studios have had reasons for making movies for a long time, and usually that reason is to make money. And that's the only reason that a lot of directors have got to make some really good work.
Right.
It's because some studio wants to make some money off of it.
Yeah.
So I think historically you can't understand the industry.
I think the guy we're about to start talking about who came on board, you know, basically flaming this thing up, you know, fanning the flames of mm-hmm. this dying fire that was happening is Francis Ford Coppola, who, you know, got his start by getting a monster studio film. You know?
Yeah.
And to his credit, what he will say and what he said in a Hollywood Reporter article was basically, look, you know, I took a big Hollywood studio. There's nothing wrong with taking a job mm-hmm. and being hired to do a job. Your job as the director is to find the singular vision of that film and carry it all the way through. Mm-hmm. That's your job. And so from that aspect, great. You know, I get it. What he was... then kind of going, that makes sense. I love that. That's a good thing for young people to hear. Like, hey, you can be part of this corporate monster and still hold on to some integrity and some mm-hmm. vision, and there's ways to work within the system.
Sure.
That's a great statement. And then he completely lambastes the entire system by trashing Marvel, you know, to a degree. Like, they're despicable. And they're, like, mm-hmm. he really goes after them. I don't want to misquote him. I can pull up the art, but it's awful.
I've got one here.
He really goes hard.
When Martin, this is from Coppola, him getting Marty's back. When Martin Scorsese says that the Marvel pictures are not cinema, he's right because we expect to learn something from cinema. Yeah. We expect to gain something, some enlightenment, some knowledge, some inspiration. Coppola continued, I don't know that anyone gets anything out of seeing the same movie over and over again. Martin was kind when he said that it's not cinema. He didn't say it's despicable, which I... just say it is.
The gentleman's 80. First exactly. of all, you know, that's the other thing. You know, Martin Scorsese, he's 76 years old. There's this whole thing in this Hollywood. I'll read this just a little bit, just to kind of, I want everybody to kind of understand, like, I don't think there's a ton of malice coming out of Scorsese. And I'm not being a Scorsese defender. I'm just reading what's there. I took it even a little harsher than when you just reread the initial quote. I'm like, oh yeah, that's all kind of like
sure,
not bad. And so what he is talking about is like, our children are, this is a quote, our children are, I mean, I don't know what they're doing on those devices. They perceive reality differently. They perceive even the concept of what history is supposed to be differently. Which is not wrong.
This is Coppola?
Potentially. No, this is Scorsese.
Scorsese, okay.
Just kind of commenting on like, yeah, I mean, like, I'm not going to have the same perspective on this as kids.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're growing up in a different world than I grew up in. And an age of technology and all mm-hmm. this information and everything. Like, the way they process information isn't even the same as the way I process information at 76 years old. You know?
Yeah, which I think he's absolutely correct on. It
Fully
might
correct.
Even be to his point that cinema doesn't have the use or it doesn't require or validate an auteur anymore often, or maybe it's not necessary because there are different modes of communication going on, and maybe Marvel's better at that than a lot of things. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think cinema will carry on just fine, you know. I mean, he's like trying to defend later in this article, like, there's no place for Noah Baumbach and Paul Thomas Anderson and, you know, all this. I'm like, I feel like I still see their stuff at the movies. At the, you know, yeah. I still go to a theater. Noah Baumbach
did release, he's going to be up for like, an Oscar this year.
You know, yeah, I mean, like, these guys, you know, they're working at a different level. He's not, like, the level of detachment in Scorsese, what he should be talking about is what are young, new directors going uh-huh. to do? How are they going to deliver, you know?
Sure.
If the cinema is closed off in this way.
Uh-huh.
Instead, he's talking about, like, basically his, you know, next generation of peers. I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson is totally inspired by Scorsese. Like, that's one of his proteges in a way.
Sure, sure, you sure.
Know? So, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like you've got to put things into perspective on this conversation in terms of, you know, who's making these comments. Not so much even what's being said, but who is making, you know, these comments.
Yeah,
Francis Ford Coppola hasn't made a film since 2011.
And what was it?
Twixt, which no one saw.
Yeah, see?
I'm not saying it's not.
Well, while we're talking about cinematic peers to Coppola and Scorsese, let's get James Gunn on the line, director of, he did the Guardians of the Galaxy movies for Marvel. He's going to be directing, directing a new Suicide Squad for DC.
Right.
Which the last one, I think I threw it on once, and I couldn't get through it.
Oh, no, it's unbearable, in my opinion. But
and I watch a lot of this shit, and I could not get through that. I can't remember a thing about it.
I try to watch all of it, too. I will say I saw a preview for the new version
Birds of Prey?
Which is, yeah, Birds of Prey.
See, that one looks good.
It looks good.
Yeah.
I'm actually okay with seeing.
Is this the one James Gunn worked on?
I don't know. I'll find out.
Me neither. Thank you for listening to the
Somebody
Sons of
call
the podcast.
And tell us. Yeah.
But here's James Gunn replying to Scorsese and Coppola. Many of our grandfathers, which is already weird, many of our grandfathers thought all gangster movies were the same, often calling them despicable, he wrote. Some of our great-grandfathers thought the same of the Westerns and believed that the films of John Ford, Sam Peckinpah, and Sergio Leone were all exactly the same. I remember a great-uncle to whom I was raving about Star Wars. He responded by saying, I saw them when it was called 2001, and boy, was it boring. Superheroes are simply today's gangsters, cowboys, outer space adventures. Some superhero films are awful. Some are beautiful, like Westerns and gangster movies, and before that, just movies. Not everyone will be able to appreciate them, even some geniuses, and that's okay. All right, Gunn. Like, that take isn't so terrible, actually.
I don't think it's a terrible take. I think there's maybe some generalization happening, for sure, but you know,
I don't know that he's correct about some of these details specifically.
Right.
Like Sergio Leone wasn't like knocking out of the park in the box office. He was making these films that made an impact
in Italy.
Sure, people probably like discounted them as not being high art, but they weren't also making all the money. And I think that this is one. I don't like that James Gunn thinks that he can even talk to Martin Scorsese or Coppola. any capacity.
Right.
He should, but whatever. He is somewhat humble about it.
And
he knows
attached to the other side of the fence. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, he is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know?
Hey,
he's a team member.
You're on the team right now. We need you to go do some PR cleanup and neutralize this a little bit. Make this.
And you can tell that I feel like that's kind of what he's doing. He's like, he doesn't. The last thing he wants to do is like bash these guys. But I also feel like he's trying to serve the purpose of Marvel and trying to put things into perspective, maybe.
Listen, Gunn, your damn response to this is a theme park. This is all for a theme park. That's the one thing I'll give Scorsese. He could have trashed him as hard as he wanted because he made the theme park analogy. For me, as someone who likes the Marvel movies, I followed him. I see a lot more nuance than he does in them. But he is dead on right. This is all to serve a purpose of a theme park. And down to if James Gunn, how he responds to it, is calculated in order to protect this theme park.
Oh, no. He didn't just do this. You know, I mean, this is a pre-approved statement.
Sure.
You know, but somebody read it, I think.
Let's start off real quick. Where are Coppola and Scorsese correct? What are they writing about this? I think we've gone over this a bit, but what are the things we think they've gotten right about their critique of non-cinema?
Well, I think they both hit on 2 points. One, this kind of, you know, popcorn-y theme park explosion is hard to deny because they physically exist. Mm-hmm. To your point,
they're event movies.
Right.
The as we read in the big picture.
Yeah.
Great book, everyone read it.
The
studio execs are talking about event movies, knowing that it's a future that we're now living in.
The minute Star Wars happened, everything changed.
Yep.
Which was part of, guess who?
Let's not do Star Wars yet. That knocks the whole argument off.
Sure. The second thing I would say they got right, so the theme park, spot on, kind of hard to argue with. The second thing was, you know, to call this... you know, art in the sense of auteur can't be. It can't. It just, the very nature of an event picture of a cinematic universe that is not controlled by Quentin Tarantino in his own little mind, you know, but like is out there for everyone and has taken, you know, from everything, and so many writers and so many visionaries and artists have poured into that to create the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You can't then go make that film, in my opinion, if you're Jon Favreau or somebody like that, and just be like, I'm just going to take it on a hard right turn here and we're going to put everybody on their ear. It's just not going to be allowed. Like, you're not going to have that kind of leeway with that kind of picture. It's just not what it is. So that's hard to argue with.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right about those things.
And I'm not taking anything away from Favreau. I heard Jeff Bridges talk about Favreau one day. It was just like going on about how good he was at the business end of his job. You know, he knew exactly how to walk off to the side with the suits and put everybody at ease, and was just very, not in a sneaky way, but like just like he's a true professional. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's very competent. And he's very good at the business, too. And that's what that needs. Mm-hmm. That's what you need to be when you're working on a $200 million picture.
Oh, I'm sure.
With 3,000 people involved.
Everyone should remember that the guy who made Swingers is probably one of the most influential and important filmmakers
of that generation. Yeah,
of
for sure.
Movies, period.
Yeah.
How movies happen after Iron Man are very different. So we owe a lot to the guy who made Swingers.
And I think that was kind of it. Like, he came out with, this is a guy who did Swingers in the early 90s, you know, I mean, which was a very, you know, auteur kind of film, too. Like, that was his movie. That's the movie he wanted to make.
All right, let's go into, why are Coppola and Scorsese, why are the mobsters wrong?
It's not even about being wrong. I mean, I think they're wrong for being so aggressive about it. I think there's a better conversation to be had than, you're in a world where you very quickly can come off sounding like just a grumpy old man.
You know,
and you're like, okay, grandpa, I got it. You know, like, but I think there's discourse to be had if you wanted to have that conversation. You know, I think it was a little clunky.
Uh-huh.
I think personally, like, I don't think Coppola was even asked about it.
He just
chimed in, you know?
Tagged
in. Well, it was. and you, here's my thing. Was that calculated? Was that an auteur making a move on his own, or was that somebody going, hey, you should say something about the Martin Scorsese thing? You're going to end up on every, you know, website on the planet if you chime in.
Yeah.
Or get a little press.
You know, I wonder if he had something coming out at all soon.
Right.
I would
feel that.
Know it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think.
Meanwhile, he was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award when he made those comments. Yeah. You know?
I mean, for what?
There's also like nothing to lose if you're them, right?
Yeah, and can you tell me, honestly, that Apocalypse Now is not just a theme park? Now, when the couple of Scorsese theme park comes out, it's going to be... Yeah, so exactly. This is what they're really getting at. Here's the one thing... here's what I think they're wrong about.
Okay.
One thing I think they're wrong about is that... No, the movies do psychological exploration of characters. They do try new things. They do tell a lot of these personal stories. So I think they're incorrect about thinking that these movies don't do that. Now, like what you said, why do they do that? They just pluck the ones that will work to sell the theme park ride. Mm-hmm. So they know they can analyze what has worked in movies, and the directors really do like a lot of movies. I mean, they're directors, so they do know how to tell stories. They do know how to pull you. They do know how to capture small nuances that are kind of fun, that are maybe a little different. I do see them getting dumbed down a bit to appeal to big audiences, but right. They do catch on to certain hero themes and certain archetypes and things that they can explore and throw into different scenarios in interesting ways that create great humor and create all these interesting situations where maybe you can learn a little something, even if it's a little tired.
Yeah.
That being said, it's clearly to get the theme park. The main reason I think they're wrong is kind of what Andy Levi had said, is that these have been around for a long time, and I'm not going to say the Sergio Leone or the novelty westerns,
right?
But I'm going to say Star Wars, their right. good friend George Lucas, when not
truly
the first one,
a Coppola protege, true like true, his like the most protege.
Yeah, let's realize that if not by Empire Strikes Back, certainly by Return of the Jedi, the toy sales were influencing the writing of these movies. Now, on the first one, I really don't think that was the case.
I disagree.
Okay, well, maybe
there,
it was.
There
maybe
was a line. Yeah. There was apparently a line. I just watched this documentary, and they were talking about these guys. And George Lucas was telling John Milius, as being interviewed, he said, I was sitting around with George Lucas, like 1976. He's working on Star Wars. And he said, you know, we're going to make so much more money on the toys than we'll ever make on the movie.
Okay.
So he knew already, and they were like pre-production.
But like, I think this is—I'm just going to say it. Allegedly, with Return of the Jedi, the Ewoks weren't they going to be Wookiees? I mean,
I had an Ewok village.
That was literally they had a new toy. Like that's where it like impacts the writing. It's not
whole
just knowing
Ewok
it's going to sell.
Village. It was a huge Christmas toy. Yeah.
So this is where I do think they're wrong. I think it's been around a long time, and to say something's not cinema, it's a little broad.
Yeah.
I don't expect Scorsese, while he's getting asked questions, among trying to hype a movie he has coming out, Irishman, which looks going to be quite an achievement. While he's doing these press junkets, sorry, he's a little dismissive and didn't go through the entire nuance of the Marvel movies and strip apart
made
parts
a bit
that
of a blanket
like.
Comment, but who cares, right?
Yeah, exactly. He made a blanket comment, and it's for us and all the annoying podcasters and Twitter users to drag this around and try to extrapolate some good conversation that is nuanced and aware of the faults that they're making fun of of the Marvel universe.
Yeah, I think there's one thing, and I want to play this clip from Sam Jackson, and we'll get out of here. But one thing that is to be said is, and you said it earlier, it's like, also it's Marvel that's crying about all this, right?
Totally.
So take your $1 billion per movie and your billions upon billions of dollars per year and just shake this off. Like, it's okay. It's not going to affect anything you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's at this point. Yeah. Should be stressed in this.
Right.
You don't get to make all the money, take all the cinema space that there is. But I do think they have marginalized directors. There's less room for new indie directors. There's less room for...
In straight, like AMC, that Carasotis kind of theaters. Yeah, those are... It's hard. It's taking up a lot of space.
So you can't take all of it and then be mad that Scorsese doesn't also love your movies. Like, you're taking all the money. you know, you don't get it all. You right. get to be made fun of sometimes by some auteurs.
But the Sam Jackson clip, I think, is worth listening to. It's only like 40 seconds, but he puts things in really nice perspective, I think, in a way that'll take us out.
All right.
Not out of the show. I want to come back, but yeah.
Well, we only got a minute left, so it's going to be that or Scorsese just gushing about movies.
Look up the Sam Jackson thing. Play the Scorsese.
Look up Sam Jackson, because he does respond to it well. But can we just play that last clip of Scorsese just gushing? It's on Twitter. Of him just loving movies.
Yeah.
Let's listen to him being a fan of movies.
Good list.
The Beautiful, or it was James Mason, The Desert Fox, or it was On the Town, or American in Paris.
Rocky.
Rocco and His Brothers. Like Rocco and His Brothers, Golden Coach, and a bunch of others. Purple Noon, and up comes Paisan. Paisan, and then Open City, then Shoeshine. And then there was another film, Open City, and then another one called Bicycle Thief.
Los Olvidados. Buñuel. With
The Golden Coach by Renoir. Right. A Divorce Italian Style, Salvatore Giuliano, and we end with The Leopard. Visconti's The Leopard.
Just recently, I Am Cuba. We did I Am Cuba.
And later on, seeing a film like Umberto D, which is on tonight, I think, at 4 in the morning on Turner Classic Movies. Okay, let's talk about Casablanca, for example.
Say, Max Ophuls Court.
Or Lawrence of Arabia. I have very strong feelings about Barry Lyndon and about 2001. Full Metal Jacket, or particularly Barry Lyndon, or The Shining. The Shining, Lolita, Clockwork Orange, Out of Eyes Wide Shut. Well, even Eyes Wide Shut. Why did the tracking shots in Paths of Glory stay with you?
As in The Red Shoes.
Yeah, but what Paul Pressburger did in the sequence of The Red Shoes ballet, or in Life and Death of Colonel...